Y'all, and welcome to the service here. Glad for you visitors that are here to help fill up some of the benches. There is a lot of sickness out there right now, as y'all all know. And I know they all appreciate our prayers, so keep praying for them. It's probably not much of a secret. George isn't. One of his first loves is probably not public speaking, but he would probably much rather be here this morning taking his place preaching than being where he's at. I'm sure he would. I can't imagine, some of the things people are going through. Thinking of Jason's in Florida and George in the hospital this morning, Brian's. People are going through hard times right now, and it makes me extra grateful for the health we have in our house. All right, we're going to have, I'm going to try to share what the Lord laid on my heart this morning. We will eventually be reading out of John, Gospel of John. First of all, let's start with a question. What do you think of when you think of a surprise? Do you like surprises? Maybe we do, maybe we don't. Probably the younger ones would say, yeah, we like surprises. Maybe some of us older ones would be a little more skeptical and say, it depends what it is. We want to know first. Being in a hospital, getting an appendix removed is probably not what we would call a good surprise. We don't like surprises like that. I got a surprise last night when I opened my freezer door in my garage and I found some little squirrels in my house had stored away snow they were trying to save for summertime. Sometimes parents find surprises like that they don't expect. And it kind of made me laugh because I remember doing the same thing as a child. And you were really lucky if mom didn't find it before July and throw it out. Because I think she did a time or two. And even if she didn't, all you had in July was a freezer burnt ice cube that lasted, 3 minutes in the shade in July in Arkansas? It didn't bring a lot of joy, or it wasn't long-lasting joy at any rate. Anyway, we find surprises like that sometimes, don't we, as parents? Probably how we view surprising things depends a lot on who's giving it, right? If a good friend of mine that I know loves me and shows up and he says, I got a surprise for you, it can be pretty exciting. If the IRS shows up on your doorstep and says, hey, I got a surprise for you, we're not quite as excited, are we? It depends on who's bringing the gift. Or who's doing the giving. So thinking about that, do you think this morning that Jesus gives good surprises? Does Jesus give good surprises? I say he does. Jesus is a God that loves me, and he loves you, and he gives us good surprises. And right behind that, I'm going to say they may not always be surprises that feel good in the moment. Maybe it's something to build my character down the road. Maybe it's something that hurts right now in the moment. But if I let Jesus do his work in my life, it will be a building block for later down the road. Another question I want to ask is, how much fun is it to give a surprise to somebody who thinks they deserve it or are owed it? It kind of takes the fun out of it if somebody thinks they have earned a gift or they have earned the right to whatever. It makes it not as fun to give, doesn't it? Jesus wants me to live for him and follow him, and he has promised to give us good things even though in the moment it may not feel like it. And I wonder sometimes that if I'm not missing out on a lot of good things Jesus would love to give me, But my lack of commitment and trust in him causes him to hold that back from me for a little. And the reason I say that is from the passage I want to read this morning in John. There's three verses I want to read. John chapter 2, 23 through 25. I read this the other morning, and I didn't understand it. And it took me a while before I think I understood it, and I'm still not sure I completely understand it. But let's read these three verses, and I'll explain what it means to me anyway. Gospel of John, chapter 2, 23. Now when he was in Jerusalem at the Passover in the feast day, many believed in his name when they saw the miracles which he did. But Jesus did not commit himself unto them, because he knew all men, and needed not that any should testify of man, for he knew what was in man. So just a little bit of background here. This was the Passover feast in Jerusalem, the city of Jerusalem. You can kind of imagine a crowded, bustling, busy place, people everywhere, streets are swarming, people are probably generally happy. It's springtime, and we have this group of people here watching Jesus. They hear about this man. They've been hearing about this man, Jesus, and now they can actually go see him. They can actually go see Jesus. And I get the picture of Jesus just starting in his ministry, and he was starting to do the work that God had planned for him. And he did start it. If we look at the background of some of this passage, Jesus had just performed his first miracle, turning water into wine. And then if we read on, it was about Jesus cleansing the temple, driving out the money changers. And then we have this little thing. So we have the people watching him do these things. And then we have these three verses, and it seems like Jesus just kind of took a break from some of this, for lack of better words. It says he would not commit himself to these people because he knew all men. He knew these people. And he stopped doing miracles for right then. Another word for that is entrusted. He wouldn't entrust himself to these people. And so we have this group of people that sometimes I think I may be in the category of this group of people. They liked the miracles Jesus did. They were enamored with them. They wanted to see him. They liked the crowd and everything that went with it. They liked to see the show. But they were having such a good time in their life that they couldn't quite commit to wholeheartedly following Jesus through all this. And it seems like Jesus just pulled himself back. It's almost like he thought that if you folks aren't going to be more committed to me than that, and you're just going to follow me for the joy of watching, and just follow me for the joy of seeing what I'm going to do next, you just want to see the water turn to wine, then I'm going to stop revealing myself to you. And I wonder if that's not me sometimes, and I know it's me sometimes, and I'm ashamed of it, but I want to watch Jesus from the distance in the crowd, just kind of at the fringes of the crowd. I want to see it. And I know, and another thing is it says many believed on his name. And I'm like that too. I believe on Jesus. I believe Jesus is God's son. But we humans tend to be like these people sometimes. We just want to see it from way back. We don't want to commit. And Jesus withheld himself from these people. What is it that makes us do that? What is it that makes me do that? Do I maybe trust my abilities just a little bit too much? Am I maybe having just a little bit too fun with where I'm at right now? Not quite ready to go the whole way with Jesus. Maybe the crowd I'm hanging out with has too much of an influence on me. People are going to think I'm an oddball if I go follow Jesus wholeheartedly. Is that what my fear is? Whatever the reason, And if I choose to gawk from a distance and pull back in the crowd, Jesus will honor my decision by withdrawing himself from me. That's the result of that. God, Jesus, will not force himself on us. He won't force himself on you. And then as a result of that, sometimes I wonder why I don't see miracles the way they used to see miracles back in the Bible times. You ever wonder that? And I think the answer is, God is not less powerful today than he was in Bible times. Not even close. He's the same God. I think Jesus is still doing miracles today. I know he is. But am I maybe blinded by, too blinded to see some of these miracles due to me not being willing to wholeheartedly invest in Jesus? Just something to think about. And that's shame on me if that's where I'm at. How often is Jesus standing there with a solution to my problem, longing to reveal himself and his power to me, but my lack of commitment is causing him to hold himself back? It's a serious question. I'd like to look at a few examples of people that had lack of commitment, and then one that had commitment. Turn to Luke 18. Luke 18:8-23. And a certain young ruler asked him, saying, "Good master, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" And Jesus said unto him, "Why callest thou me good? None is good save one, and that is God. Thou knowest the commandments: do not commit adultery, do not kill, do not steal, do not bear false witness, honor thy father and thy mother." And he said, "All these things have I kept from my youth up." Now when Jesus heard these things, he said unto him, "Yet lackest thou one thing. Sell all that thou hast, and distribute unto the poor, and thou shalt have treasure in heaven, and come and follow me." And when he heard this, he was very sorrowful, for he was very rich. So we have an example of a man here that was about as perfect as you could get, it seems. He had a lot going on for him. He was raised in a good home, probably had good parents. He was taught right from wrong. He didn't have a long criminal record or any trash in his background that's going to keep him from getting a good job or whatever. He was probably an honest man that you would have wanted to do business with. He knew the commandments, and according to his own testimony, he kept the commandments, and Jesus didn't challenge him on that. I have a feeling Jesus could have probably pointed out some areas he could have fine-tuned or some things that happened in his past. He did to other people, but he chose not to in this case. But Jesus didn't jump on him Jesus kind of admitted this was a pretty good young man. But this man, unlike Zacchaeus, he had a money problem. Zacchaeus had a money problem too, and we'll talk about him a little bit later, but he related to it a little bit different. This young man was different in that he loved his riches more than he loved the thought of following Jesus. He probably liked the fringe of the crowd and was enamored with some of Jesus' teachings and his miracles, but it didn't do him any good because he couldn't let go of this one area in life. He couldn't let it go. He just liked it a little bit too good. And what a sad statement that he went away very sorrowful. And I often wonder what happened to that young man. Did he go and live, and if he went and he lived an empty life and he never changed, do you think that at the end of his life he looked back and he regretted that decision? I'm sure he did. I have a hope he went and he changed his ways later and became a follower of Jesus. We don't read about that, but I hope that's what happened to him. But if he didn't, I can assure you he regretted that at the end of his life. I'd like to look at another man in Acts 26. just a couple of verses in here, 26, 27, and 28. This was Paul and Agrippa. Let's see here. Verse 28, then Agrippa said unto Paul, almost thou persuadest me to be a Christian. And Paul said, I would to God that not only thou, but also all that hear me this day, were both almost and altogether such as I am, except in these bonds. He's going to read verse 27 too, the first one there. King Agrippa, believest thou the prophets? I know that thou believest. That was Paul talking to this politician. And this, it's such sad words of what Agrippa had to say. Almost thou persuadest me to be a Christian. He was almost committed. Paul had him almost talked into it. And he said this, if you read that whole chapter there, 26, it kind of gives more background to it. But he had a lot to say to this man. And the man, I feel, knew what he was supposed to do, but he couldn't do it. He could not commit. He could not commit. Was he worried about his power and position of what would happen if he was going to happen to that if he became a Christian? Probably. I don't know what would have happened if a man like Agrippa would have became a Christian. He would have probably been worried about what's going to happen to his country. And his. It would have obviously caused a, or I'm fairly certain it would have caused a, I don't know if you want to say an uproar, but it would have definitely been a pivotal moment in that country. But was it anything that couldn't have been solved by Jesus? No, it could have worked. What miracles and what story, think about the rich young ruler and this man Agrippa, what stories would we have in there here if these men would have committed and said, you know what, I'm going to follow Jesus no matter what. I'm not going to hang out in the fringe of the crowd. I'm going to go do this. What stories would we have in the Bible? Couldn't help but think about that. And I don't want to end this message on a negative note. There's a man I want to talk about yet in Luke 19. Jesus and Zacchaeus. I always liked the story of Zacchaeus as a youngster. Thinking about a little short man climbing a sycamore tree. The Bible even gives the type of tree it was. I don't know if any of y'all ever climbed a sycamore tree. I know I did, or I have already, and if a sycamore tree is at all wet, and I ain't saying this tree was wet, it doesn't say, but they are just slippery as grease almost. Most of the times when I read this story, I think about we used to on our farm have a deer stand and a big sycamore tree down on the corner. It's actually on Brian Summers' property now. I don't know if that tree stand's still there or not, but it was a big sycamore tree. And we had a stand way up in there. And Darrell Harris, if any of y'all remember old Darrell Harris, used to walk across that property with us boys, and he would look up at that tree stand, he'd shake his head, and he said, y'all gonna fall out of that and break your neck one of these days. He knew how slippery, or when these trees got wet, how slick they could be. It's very, very smooth bark trees. Anyway, we have Zacchaeus here. We'll read the story 19, 1 through 10. And Jesus entered and passed through Jericho, and behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus, which was chief among the publicans, and he was rich. And he sought to see Jesus, who he was, and could not for the press, because he was little of stature. And he ran before and climbed up into the sycamore tree to see him, for he was to pass that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up, and he saw him, and he said unto him, Zacchaeus, make haste and come down, for today I must abide at thy house. And he made haste and came down and received him joyfully. And when they saw him, they all murmured, saying that he was gone to be a guest with a man that was a sinner. And Zacchaeus stood and said unto the Lord, behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor, and if I have taken anything from any man by false accusation, I restore him fourfold. And Daryl, sorry, Daryl. I'm still thinking about Darrell Harris. Verse 9, and Jesus, not Darrell, said unto him, this day is salvation come to this house, for as much as he also is the son of Abraham. For the Son of Man is come to seek and to save that which is lost. All right. Somehow, Jesus' teaching made the trip, the approximate distance of 18 inches from the head down to Zacchaeus' heart. He got it. Zacchaeus understood where he was at before God. And he knew exactly what he did wrong up to that point. And he decided, right then and there, he's going to make a 180-degree circle, half turn, and go back exactly the opposite way of what he was going before. He changed his mind. He knew that what Jesus told him was right, and he had no desire to follow that path anymore. He was done with it. And I just love that story of Zacchaeus. He was done with the old. He was willing to make anything right in his past he possibly could, and he was going to live a different life from then on. The joy and the happiness Zacchaeus must have felt had to be very confirming in his mind that he was doing the right thing. And it's such a different ending than the story of the rich young ruler and King and the Agrippa. All because Zacchaeus wholeheartedly, no questions asked, said, yes, Jesus, I'm going to follow you no matter what. And we still sing about this man today. Zacchaeus was a wee little man. Y'all still sing that song? We used to sing it in school. I don't know of any songs about Agrippa and the rich young ruler. They might be out there, probably, but they probably have a negative context. I don't know. But this story makes an impression on us today yet. Am I willing to commit it to Jesus and do as he, let him do as he pleases and let him surprise me with whatever miracles he deems fit? Even if we don't physically see the water turn to wine, it's still miracle enough to live for Jesus with a clear conscience, is it not? Solomon said in 1 Kings 8:61, he was talking, it was a prayer and an encouragement to the children of Israel. He said, let your heart therefore be perfect with the Lord our God, to walk in his statutes, to keep his commandments. He's pleading with us. If you make the commitment, just stay committed to God. A.W. Tozer says, everything is safe which we commit to him, and nothing is really safe which is not so committed to him. So why do I sometimes struggle to commit it all to where I know it's safe? Is it because I'm a human and I have lack of trust at times? Probably. But that doesn't mean we don't need to do it anyway. We like control, don't we? We like to feel like we can handle any situation. And the truth is, none of us, no matter how capable we may seem, can walk the Christian life without God. We can't. We need Jesus' help. And this just wanted to be a challenge this morning to y'all and to myself, not to be an uncommitted disciple of Jesus. Don't be an uncommitted disciple of Jesus. If we've decided we're going to follow Jesus, well then let's do it. Let's do it. And if God shows us miracles along the way, if he wants to work on us along the way, let him do it. Just commit it to Jesus. A wise preacher told me one time that when you're done talking, sit down and don't say anything else. So that's what I'm going to do. God bless y'all. Why don't we kneel for prayer?